Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
The final state budget passed by the House and Senate increases funding for the state school voucher program, known as Opportunity Scholarships, that provides state funding to private and religious schools with very few strings attached. Many of the schools openly discriminate against LGBTQ students, and the schools are not required to administer the same standardized tests as public schools, making it difficult to know how well the students are doing. Duke Law Professor Jane Wettick says that's a problem. Wettick issued a report this spring about the academic achievement at voucher schools, and we talked to her about it on News and Views. Well, Jane, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about your recent report, School Vouchers in North Carolina. What prompted your looking at how vouchers are doing?
Well, it has been 3 years since we've had the program. I know that the legislature is interested in expanding the program and, in fact, has already set it up for expansion. So it just seemed like a good first step to share with the legislature and the public how it's been going so far.
One of the claims that strong voucher supporters make is that, despite some evidence to the contrary in national studies, that this actually helps kids achieve more, especially low-income kids who are the ones who are eligible here. One of the things you looked at was how voucher students are performing.
Yes, it's hard to make comparisons to public school children, but certainly there were no broad indications that children were doing great in private schools. They are still, more than half of them are scoring below national standards, median national standards. So we don't have any indication that they will do better or have done better, but there is no way to track an individual student from the public's point of view, nor is there really any way to track the cohort of students who left the public schools and are now in private schools with vouchers. So we don't have enough data to make any real determinations of how well the students are doing or if they are improving their academics. As you note, the national studies, particularly two very recent national studies, are showing that students tend to do academically worse when they leave the public schools and go to private schools with vouchers.
One thing was striking about your study, and I think folks who are listening may not realize that one of the reasons we don't have data is that the schools aren't required to take the same end of grade test and report the same way, and so it's really hard to compare.
Exactly. The law requires that students be tested annually, but the school may select their own test, and they don't need to make the public aware of the outcomes unless they have more than 25 students in the school receiving vouchers. So right now we're only getting data on about 10% of the students. So we don't have much to look at.
And you also point out that this, for a second, putting aside the philosophical objections to vouchers and some of the other issues, some states that have a similar voucher program do have a lot more requirements or accountability, and we can sort of tell.
So many of the other states do require the voucher students to take exactly the same test that is being taken by the public school students. Others have some requirements with regard to the curriculum or a set of academic standards that the schools have to meet. And we don't have any of that in North Carolina. So it's quite possible to be a school receiving vouchers that doesn't teach science or operates only 3 hours a day or allows high school graduates to be the teachers without any college degrees. All of that is lawful in North Carolina. And a school like that could receive voucher payments for tuition.
It's interesting we're having this discussion as the General Assembly is considering toughening background checks for teachers in public schools. And if I'm not mistaken, teachers in voucher schools don't have to undergo any checks.
That's exactly right. The law says that there must be a background check on the one person at the school with the highest decision-making power. And that's all that's required.
I know you obviously very informed and work on this and run into folks who are probably on all sides of it. And one of the most common refrains we hear is, well, parents choosing the school is the ultimate accountability measurement.
That is exactly what they say. And I'm sure many parents do a good job of that. Many parents have different values, however, with regard to their children's education. And quite a few parents put their religious beliefs above academic standards in terms of the school that they're selecting. I think, of course, most parents who choose religious education are choosing it because they want their children in a religious education, but they also want them to be well educated. But that's not 100% for sure. So there's really nothing in the law that might protect a student against a poor choice that his or her parent makes.
I know in the report you say close to 93% of the vouchers have been used to pay tuition at religious schools. It really is almost becoming the voucher program is a religious school program.
Pretty much. And there are a couple reasons for that. One, because those religious schools tend to be subsidized by the church, they can keep their tuition lower, and so it's more accessible with a voucher. The voucher payment is only up to $4,200 a year. So a high-end college preparatory private school has a tuition of $19,000 or $20,000 a year. So a family that's eligible for a voucher, which is a family with an income of under $60,000 for a family of four, they're not going to have $16,000 extra dollars after they use their voucher to finish off paying the tuition. So they need to be able to go to a school with a low tuition, and those do tend to be the religious schools.
Members of the general public, in most surveys, if you ask them about vouchers, they're generally opposed, although we've seen polls that have been manipulated, obviously, to find whatever result they would like. But do you think the public actually understands the lack of accountability and knows where this money is going? I'm always surprised that people don't seem to understand how the program works or doesn't work.
I think most people don't understand the specifics. They just think, well, choice sounds like a good idea, and a parent should be able to choose the school that the parent thinks is best for their child. And that's kind of as far as they get. And they don't really understand the technical aspects of curriculum requirements or testing requirements or accreditation, those sorts of things.
As you point out in the report, the budget passed last year increases vouchers every year until it's, I think, roughly 25,000 kids and $145, $150 million a year. Now we're talking about a big impact on the budget and significant numbers of children.
Right. If that all stays in place, we will be spending a lot more money. I mean, that by 2027, it'll be nearly $1 billion. So people have to start making decisions about whether they'd want that money to go to the public schools, or they'd rather support religious schools with that state money.
And finally, before I let you go, if we're going to have vouchers, what would you, from your research, what would you like to see? What can we do in the immediate future to make these more accountable?
I really support more requirements on the private schools with regard to teacher qualifications, requirements for a curriculum that is at least equivalent to the public school, or putting in place some sort of accreditation requirements so that at least we can be sure that if we're spending money to support children in private schools, that they are getting the kind of education that we think they need to get, you know, when they graduate and come to participate in the democracy and the economy, that they're ready to do that.
Well, this report will help, I hope, keep that debate going. Really appreciate you doing it, and thanks for being with us.
Nice talking to you.
Up next, a look back at the Republicans' 2010 plan to take over Congress in time to draw the districts for the next 10 years. Stay tuned.